guest growl, Ramona.
Hey, how's that?
Hey, it's Monday, and Mason is on another pandemic vacation. He leads the country in pandemic vacation. Only Steve Mason would find a way to take vacations when you can't go anywhere. But he's out for another week, and we are lucky to have Ramona. I haven't seen you. I haven't talked to you. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I feel like that's one of the things with this pandemic. Like, we don't get to see each other at Laker games. And, you know, I text you here and there. You text me here and there, right? Didn't we?
It's not the same.
It's not the same. I need to see you for those 3 minutes when you're running from up top to the men's room.
Yes, I'm always on the move. Yeah. But I'm glad you're here today. We have a short show today. We're only on for an hour and a half. And then Laker basketball in the bubble. Lakers and Denver. And Ramon, I want to start there. The big story today is in college football. It looks like college football might go away entirely. Bruce Feldman, our buddy and my neighbor, will join us at 3:30 at the bottom of the hour. So we're going to get all into that with Bruce. But Ramona, first let me start with this. I was listening to Brian Windhorst's Hoop Collective podcast today.
Okay.
And Brian, Tim Bontemps, and even Dave McMenamin are all very worried about the Lakers. I am not. Windhorst asked McMenamin, what's your level of concern on a scale of 1 to 10? And McMenamin said 7.
Whoa.
Which for him is rare.
That's rare.
When I talked to Dave last week, he was like, they'll figure it out. But he says there's a couple of things he doesn't like. He doesn't like the fact that all the Lakers are talking about how weird it is in the bubble rather than embracing it. He says most of the other teams are embracing it. And he's talking about the shooting, that they have been ice-cold shooting. Now, because I covered those Shaq and Kobe teams, and I covered those Kobe and Pau teams, and I saw those teams, Ramona, lay eggs left, right, and sideways and still win championships. So I'm not overly concerned or panicked. I think when the bell rings, LeBron and AD are going to answer it, and the Lakers are going to make a deep run and probably win it. But I don't, you know, I look at the world through purple and gold colored glasses. I root for them, so I make some of these decisions with my heart and not my head. How concerned should Laker fans be about the current state of the Lakers, in your opinion?
John, I'm with you, man. I'm not that concerned. Like, I think shooting comes and goes. I think Danny Green has been, you know, a little hurt, a little dinged up. He's, you know, hasn't been shooting the ball well. But, like, they're just messing around out there. Like, I don't think they have any kind of consistency. I don't think they have any kind of, like, they're just trying to see if Talen Horton Tucker can play a little bit. They're trying to see if, you know, Quinn Cook is is a viable option, and in which cases they are. From what I've seen from them, they look like they're just seeing which guys they can throw into the rotation and under what circumstances. Can they get, I mean, Talen Horton Tucker's played like 18, 19 minutes the last two games.
Right.
I mean, he hasn't played all year. And then,
by the way, for people who don't know, Talen Horton Tucker is 19 years old. He's a rookie for the Lakers who has not played all season. He is the youngest player in the NBA, Momo. He doesn't turn 20 until November. But they've been throwing him out. They've liked what they've seen of him in practice. They've been throwing him out there to see if he's worthy of minutes in the postseason. And frankly, if I was Frank Vogel, this is what I would be doing. These games mean nothing. I want to find out what combinations work, who can play, who can't play, who can play well together. The results wouldn't concern me, but it seems like a lot of other media and a lot of fans are worried about the Lakers when I'm not. I just think that Vogel's doing what I would do.
Yeah, there's some level of you want them to show out a little bit. You want them to show, like, have one game where they look good. But you know which game I think that was? The first one when they played the Clippers, and they didn't, the first two games where they go and beat the Clippers. And who was the other one against them?
Well, they beat Utah, and Anthony Davis dropped 40 on them.
Right. Those two games that they won, they had two of the worst shooting nights of the year, and they still won those games against very good teams that were playing. Like, they weren't resting guys or anything. Once they started sitting guys, once they started, you know, experimenting with lineups and stuff, now they're losing a few games, but I don't think any of this matters right now. I think they're just trying to get everybody going, trying to see, okay, this is what it looks like when Waiters is out there. This is what JR gives us. This is what Horton Tucker can give us. I think it's interesting they're playing THT because, can we just call him that?
Sure.
THT,
I do during the game sometimes.
Yeah, it's easier. he's got, what is his wingspan, John? I heard you say it. I mean, it's.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. He's an athletic freak. Yeah.
And he has that potential to be a real asset for them, not just now, but maybe in the future with that wingspan, the defensive ability, the ability to shoot. Like, if they want to see how far along he is, because they haven't seen much of him at all this year. So, I mean, same way Denver's doing with Bol Bol and Michael Porter Jr. Like, everybody's just trying things right now.
Well, Michael Porter Jr., I think, is a different name. We're gonna get to describe Michael Porter Jr. for you tonight.
Yeah.
He's been their best player, Denver's best player in the bubble. Now, it's a little misleading because Jamal Murray played his first game the last game, so he hasn't been playing. But Michael Porter has been great, and he's kind of a wild card for them. He would have been the first pick in the draft, Ramona, a few years ago. He was the number one recruited player coming out of high school. He averaged 36 points a game in high school, and then he had two back surgeries. Yep. He went to Missouri for a year, and he didn't play in Missouri. He played like two games. And nobody wanted to take a chance on a guy with two back surgeries. Mm-hmm. So Denver took him at the very end of the lottery. They took him with the 14th pick. And it may pay off in huge dividends if this kid turns out to be what everybody thought he was 5 years ago, which is a number one, two, or three pick. You know, he could be Jason Tatum. Yep. And we're going to find out, and the Lakers are going to get a look at him tonight. So Denver is, I think, the Western Conference playoffs are really interesting because I think the only team I would completely throw out is Utah. I don't think Utah can win it because they don't have Bojan Bogdanovic. They just don't look right. I don't think Utah is a threat. But would I be shocked? I've picked the Lakers, so have you, from the beginning
of the season.
I don't
think Dallas can win it. You really think they could win it?
Have you seen Luka?
I know. The game against the Bucks was pretty awesome.
Well, and Porzingis has that I can take over a game. I don't know if he has that I can take over a series.
Hmm.
But they have Rick Carlisle as their coach. When they won it in 2012, Ramona, nobody thought they were going to win it. Nobody picked them that year. The Lakers it was 2011, I'm sorry.
2011.
The Lakers were coming off of two straight championships, and they got hot, and they rode Dirk, and Carlisle is a good coach, and Jason Kidd was on that team. And they'll tell you that they just peaked at exactly the right time. And I Dallas looks really good in the bubble. And I think Houston has shown signs where they look really good.
Yeah.
Would you be absolutely shocked if Portland made a run deep in the playoffs?
No, wouldn't be shocked at all.
Yeah, I mean, they look really good. So I think the playoffs are going to be fascinating. I still, though, even though the Lakers have not played well, I would still favor the Lakers. 51-18 is 51-18.
Yeah.
It's that for a reason.
I know. And Avery Bradley is a big loss for them, yes. They're going to get Rondo back. He's already there training. I don't know how much you think that helps. A lot of people would say that that doesn't help, but that's I'm the last person living on Rondo Island. Okay.
No, you're not.
You're on the island with me?
Well, no, here's why. So if you study Portland with Dame and C.J. Lillard, okay, or C.J. McCollum. Lillard and C.J. McCollum. They had one postseason that was pretty inexplicable. It was 3 years ago. They drew New Orleans in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And Rajon Rondo and Anthony Davis swept them out of the first round. Like, those guards, Dame and C.J. could not match up with Drew Holiday and Rajon Rondo. And AD wasn't even that dominant in that series, but Rondo and Holiday owned those two guards. So even if Rondo doesn't play, I think he has institutional knowledge in how to defend and play against Lillard and McCollum. And you know, I probably should at this point, but I still think Memphis, all they got to do is win one game, Ramona. One game.
Right.
Memphis get back into the playoffs. So I'm not 100% sure it's Portland. I'm pretty sure it's going to be them in round one. But I would absolutely think Rondo is an asset and not a liability if he's available in round one.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I've been one of the last residents of Rondo Island. So I'm glad that you also live on that island with me, because, I mean, I thought I was going to be talking to coconuts pretty soon. Like, I mean, there were so many people who were like so down on Rajon Rondo all year. And I understand. I mean, I'm sure Greg Bergman can like hear me talking about this, and he's getting upset.
Yes,
just driving around.
He hates everybody. He hates Kuzma.
It's
Kuzma's been great.
Yeah. Yeah, he hates Koozie. You know what? I think he does like Caruso.
Yeah.
I think he does like Alex Caruso. Yeah, that's what he likes.
Bergman, but, I make fun of him all the time because he hates everything.
Yeah, he hates everything. But like, to me, Rondo is a guy who's been there, who's won championships, who knows how to win. And in the playoff, there is no substitute for that. And that's why you saw LeBron say yes to J.R. Smith. That's why you saw, you know, him say yes to Rondo. And I don't know if I would put Deion Waiters in the same category here because they didn't win together in Cleveland. But, like, players know. Like, you know, when Rajon Rondo was in that locker room, people look at him as a leader. They look at him as a guy who's been there and done that. They look at him. It reminds me a little of the way they used to look at Derek Fisher. Like, when you knew Steve Blake was better than Derek Fisher at some point, but at the end of the game, you still wanted Fish in there because he was going to make the right play.
Right.
Yeah.
I absolutely think that Rondo adds value. And the other thing is, Frank Vogel will tell you, it's like having another coach. It's like having an unpaid coach because he understands the game and he's really smart. But we'll see. The Lakers, they have two more of these seeding games, Ramona. Today, against the Nuggets, we'll have it for you at 6 o'clock. And then we just found out that Thursday's game is going to be early, 10:30 in the morning. One of the reasons they're doing that is to send Sacramento home. Sacramento has been eliminated already.
Right.
And so they want to get the teams that have no reason to be there out of there as soon as possible. So the Kings are actually going to play that game, go to a hotel, shower, and get on a bus and go right to the plane and fly home. They're going to get them out of the bubble as quickly as possible. And one thing, you know, I haven't talked to you, but I think this NBA bubble has been as close to perfect as you can imagine. When you look at all the problems that baseball is having, we're going to talk about football coming up here in a minute, but this NBA bubble, they haven't messed around. They followed protocol. There haven't been positive tests. Anybody who violates the, as Mason calls it, sanctity of the bubble gets put into quarantine. And I think that the NBA and Adam Silver deserve a tremendous amount of credit for pulling this off as well as they have. They haven't messed around from the beginning.
Well, I think it also, it comes to, and I every time I was writing about this or reporting on this, it just comes down to trust. There's a lot of trust between the players' union and the league. And when you have trust between Chris Paul, Adam Silver, and, you know, really Bob Iger, who runs Disney, and that's the host of this whole thing. Like, it was just this group of three or four people who were making that decision. Chris Paul and Michelle Roberts from the union, Adam Silver from the NBA, and Bob Iger and a couple of his lieutenants, from Disney. It was a small working group that just got it all together. Whereas in baseball, you have so many different interests. You have so many people who dislike each other, hate each other, don't trust each other. And that's how you end up with where baseball is.
You see today, the Cardinals just canceled another doubleheader.
Another series. So I play fantasy baseball, right? I'm in Mason's League. You know, right. My uncle and I were the ringers. So we came. My fantasy baseball name is Mondesi's Cannon. Okay, I should tell you. So tell you my background. Okay. So we were looking at the standings, and we have this guy on the. We have a couple guys on the Cardinals on our team, and I was like, I just think we should drop them. I don't think they're going to play. I think, but at some point, if you look at the standings, like I said, off the top of your head, can you name who is in first place in the NL East? What team do you think is in first place right now based on how crazy baseball's been?
Marlins.
Just take a guess. Yeah, 7-3.
Well, okay, have you noticed the Yankees?
Yeah.
The Yankees 10-6. Stink. No, they stink. It's the opposite. They can't win. They only win when Garrett Cole pitches. And everybody thought the Yankees were like on their way to the World Series. It's going to go down as the weirdest baseball season of all time. Yeah. Then you had this idiotic.
Astros are terrible.
Yeah, you had this idiotic thing over the weekend where the Astros and A's get in a bench-clearing brawl when baseball told them, look, we're in a different world now. You guys can't fight. We can't get in a fight. So the Astros, who think none of the rules apply to them, bait the A's into a fight. The A's going to now you got to suspend both the people that got into that fight for like 20 games to make an example out of them. This whole season, Ramona, makes no sense.
I'm glad they expanded the playoff field because it's just such a small sample size. And I'm looking at this now going, you know what the Cardinals' record is on the season right now?
I think they've played like
2-3.
Yeah, five games.
They played five games. What are we doing here? Right. Like, they're going to have to make
you may
want to
just
teams.
Kneecap their whole season because yeah. they can't seem to get it right. All right, coming up next, football, college football is on the precipice of being canceled permanently for the whole season. Moving it to the spring. Is that a good idea or a bad idea? We'll get into that next. Ramona Shelburne, in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, ESPN LA.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Today, it's Momo in Ireland. Ramona Shelburne in for Mace. We got a short show. We're only going until 4:30. Today, Game of Games written by Ramona Shelburne. Ramona's games are always, shall we say, interesting. Do you think you met the challenge today, Momo?
Yeah, you know what this is not an interesting one. I just copied something Steve Mason did once.
Okay, now you know though
did my own version.
Okay, but you know in this particular game, and this may make you scramble to redo it, we need to have one winner at the end.
Yeah, I know. Okay. I got you.
All right.
I got you. It's okay.
So the big story, really it started to swell yesterday. But the big story in all of sports is that college football looks like it might get canceled. There are several conferences meeting. Reporters, very reputable reporters, Ramona, are saying that the Big Ten is about to announce that they're canceling the whole season this fall. They might move it to the spring. The Pac-12 is meeting tomorrow. I can't imagine there's a scenario under which the Big Ten would not play and the Pac-12 would. The SEC is another wild card. I know you talk to a lot of these reporters. What do you think the fate of college football is?
I think that if we have any kind of a season, it will only be the Big Five conferences. Okay, the Power Five. Okay, yeah. I think that that is the only chance we have of saving anything this fall, because those five can unite and come up with a set of testing protocols,
right,
et cetera.
But let me put this into the mix. This was reported by Mark Schlabaugh about an hour ago.
Yeah.
A rare heart condition
that
could be linked with the coronavirus is fueling concern among Power Five conference administrators about the viability of college sports this fall. Microcarditis, inflammation of the heart muscle, has been found in at least five Big Ten athletes and among several other athletes in other conferences. The condition is usually caused by a viral infection, including those that cause the common cold. So if this is a real thing, if it left undiagnosed and untreated, it can cause heart damage and sudden cardiac arrest, which can be fatal. That's, what lost his Hank Gathers.
Yeah.
It's a rare condition, but the COVID-19 virus has been linked with microcarditis at a higher frequency with other viruses. So the concern has made the bar higher for all of these people. And Ramona, without answers to that heart virus, I don't see a way they can play. Yet if you listen to people today, if you listen to Jim Harbaugh, if you listen to Nick Saban, they make the argument that they think the students and the athletes would be safer on their college campuses than they would staying at home. I understand that point. Ramona, what I don't understand is, how can you argue they'd be safer if they were playing football? You know, if you're playing football, I'm trying to tackle you. I'm trying to throw you to the ground. We're sweating on top of other people. Explain to me that. How can they be safer? Well, I understand the concept of, if I'm a guy living in Montgomery, Alabama, and I go to Baton Rouge because my team's there, and they've got me in some type of a restricted access area with my team, being in Baton Rouge would be potentially safer, but not when I start playing football, right?
Yeah, I disagree. I think they're right about that. I think it is safer than going about your day-to-day life because...
Even when you're tackling and sweating and running.
Because the player, theoretically, the players that you would be playing against and interacting with on a daily basis are getting tested every day or every other day. I mean, I think, you know, when I go about my day-to-day life, I don't see too many people. We all try to go get tested, you know, fairly regularly so that we're able to, you know, feel like there's some kind of stopgap. We all have anybody that I see, we have had certain levels of protocols. But when you're just walking around outside, if you're just going around, you know, college town, or if you're at college, if there's in-person instruction or not in-person, you have no idea what everyone else has been doing, how often they've been tested, how safe they're being, whether it's social, did they go to a party last night? Whereas if you're playing against a set of football players who are subjected to whatever rules they all come up with, I do think it's safer. I know that you're getting in direct contact, but like, to me, that's safer than going to a party, which I think we're going to see a lot of in college campuses. We've already seen some of that.
Well, Ray, what I was going to say is if they bring all these athletes on campus to play football, what makes you think they're not going to have a party?
Right. And the question is, have we decided whether we're having on-campus instruction at these places? Like the biggest challenge for college football is that there's no institution that governs all of them. I'm sorry, there is one. It's called the NCAA, but they don't do anything. So because they don't have anybody in charge, it's just the same. You're trying to make national policy for what is essentially a school-by-school, conference-by-conference situation. And I don't even think conference-by-conference. It's more, when we had the Pac-12 commissioner, Larry Scott, on, I mean, he said it was, you know, kind of depends on what's going on in each area. So
right. For
that's
example,
the
Mountain West Conference just postponed all fall sports.
Yeah. I think the most likely thing is, unless we see a Hail Mary from the Power Five conferences in the next 24 hours, I think all fall sports get postponed till the spring, which is a problem because if you are a NFL prospect, if you are somebody who thinks that you can play next year on Sundays, you're not going to want to wait till the spring and then go straight into an NFL camp. You don't want to you want to be done with your season, letting your body recover, training in a professional facility with the support of a professional agent as soon as possible. So I think all the guys who were like first round picks, they're going to go sign with an agent and just train off campus.
Right. And it would make the combine the most important combine ever.
Yeah.
You know, I think that if I was running college football, I think I would pull the plug.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems to me that Ramona, these guys aren't getting paid.
I know.
I don't know how you can ask them to go play.
Yeah. I don't know. They want to play. Hashtag we want to play. I mean, that's what they've been saying. And, you know, I understand a lot of them do, but, this has ramifications all down the line of what are we doing with junior college football? What are we doing with high school football? What are we doing with high school sports? Like, are we doing in person or not in person? Like, this is where not having any national policies comes into play here, because it's really just left up to, like, let's say your high school senior. How are you going to get scouted this year? What are we going to do for signing days? It's going to be based on your junior year. It's going to be based on some highlight mixtape you send in. I mean, it's just a very with baseball, canceling everything all down the road with minor league baseball and all those other affiliates that have been just canceled for the year. Like whatever college football does here affects everyone else. And I don't want to point out the money of this, but
well, I was just going to say
factor.
It's $4 billion with a B. And Ramona, what makes it more complicated, and your alma mater, Stanford, was a good example of this. Stanford basically about a month ago kneecapped 11 sports. They could have kept them. I mean, Stanford does well.
Right.
It's a private school. But one of the reasons they did it is they pointed out that football and basketball pay for all the other sports.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you don't have football and basketball, then you either come up with money elsewhere or you've got to scuttle some sports. And, they were the first ones to do it.
Wait, are you saying that the folks at Stanford – looked at data and science and just did some forecasting like a month ago and realize that the likelihood of a normal college football and college basketball season that would fund the rest of the athletic department, they did some forecasting, some sort of highfalutin, you know, educational, scientific forecasting and made that decision. Is that what you're saying? That Stanford was like light years ahead?
Are you pretty happy that you just found a way to work that in? That you weren't already pompous enough, you had to display it for all to hear.
Oh.
Literally, you had to go there.
When Stanford did that, it was, I mean, I guess we were a day behind
and
the
you
Ivy League.
And you wonder why people hate Stanford. Unbelievable.
Look, if you can't laugh at a pandemic, if you can't find something to laugh at now, well, I don't know what else we have left, you know? Yeah.
Plus, anyone who listens to this show knows you really went to Cal. So all
that's right.
Is just, you know, ridiculous. But, all right, coming up next, Bruce Feldman is going to join us. Bruce, who used to work with us at ESPN and now works for Fox, writes for The Athletic, is as close to college football as anybody I know. And we'll get the absolute latest from Bruce. And it's a really hard decision, to be honest, Shimona, because the money, you like you said, you don't want to point to the money and say, this is the reason we're playing. The problem is, if you don't, a lot of other sports could go under. And so it's a real dilemma that they're going to have to tackle. And I think it's going to be decided within the next 24 to 72 hours.
Yep.
I just think that's where it's heading. All right. Bruce Feldman coming up next. Ramona Shelburne, Informace. I'm John Ireland, ESPN LA. And a lot going on in the world of sports, including Lakers Nuggets tonight from the Orlando bubble. Michael and I will call that game for you. Tip-off is at 6 o'clock. Michael and Alan Sliwa will be here at 4:30 to start the pregame show, and that's why we have a short show today. Ramona Shelburne is sitting in for Mace, and we're talking about college football. Our buddy Bruce Feldman is going to join us here in a couple of minutes. And Ramona, the one thing that we talked about, the fact that you'd be giving up $4 billion in revenue. Mm-hmm. The one thing I don't understand how it would work is there are some schools, like I read today, Nebraska, if the Big Ten cancels football, would think about trying to find 7 or 8 independent opponents and having a season anyway, because COVID isn't a really big problem. I don't think I've ever seen a sport more in need of, for lack of a better term, a commissioner, a czar, like one person in front. Because right now, it's
such
like Game of Thrones. You know, like the Seven Kingdoms, and all these people are fighting against each other.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's interesting, because I thought this would all come down to legal liabilities. So when the Big Ten cancels, then how does the Pac-12 or the SEC or the, the ACC, how do they then justify a season when another conference has already decided that it's too much of a health risk for their athletes, that they or their coaches and their athletes? If anything were to happen to a Pac-12 player, let's say they get COVID, they get sick and die, God forbid. Okay, there's a major lawsuit exposure here when other college football programs have determined that it is unsafe for them to play. So I just think you have to shut it all down. Once one big school, the big conference does it, don't all of them? I mean, unless you can find somebody to insure you against those kind of lawsuits, or, you know, I know that has been part of the talks on Capitol Hill as part of the new stimulus plan. Let's say you go to an office and it's your office, you get COVID. If you can prove that, can you sue the workplace for not protecting you from COVID? Like, did you have unsafe conditions?
Sure.
Did they follow CDC guidelines? Did they, you know, like, there are several lawsuits now that have come up in people whose loved ones contracted and died from COVID. They said, you know, one was a supermarket worker and they said they didn't require people to wear a mask at that time, et cetera, et cetera. So if college football decides to cancel because they think following CDC guidelines, they can't ensure that their athletes will be safe, I don't know how any school can take that legal risk or that legal liability.
Right. And it's and they all have legal departments and they all have staff attorneys that are all telling them the same thing. And then you circle back to, okay, if you don't have football at, let's say, Ohio State, how do you pay for all the other sports?
You don't is what you don't do is you just don't have them. So you free.
And so
you
this might, affects hundreds and hundreds of men and women.
Yes. So the scholarships that players have, I think those are guaranteed, but they're year to year. I was on a scholarship a couple of the years I was at Stanford, not every year. Like basically my first year I was on half a scholarship. And they said, you know, this is year to year. It's just going to be dependent on, you know, how many other people we sign or, you know, so be like, you have to get financial aid or you should apply for it every year regardless, because we won't know until the end of the year. I was on it. I got a half a scholarship my first year. I was on no scholarship my second and third years. And then my fourth year because, and it was, you know, I'd like to think it was because they were trying to reward me, but it was actually because one of our scholarship players quit, right? They gave me a scholarship my last year, okay? It's year to year.
Ramona, so somebody who would know, and it may be conference to conference, but when Mason and I were talking about this last week, somebody who knows told me that that has changed, at least in the Pac-12, that if you get a scholarship, you get it for 4 years.
Interesting.
That it used to be that way, and that's why it was that way for you, but they've amended it. Now, they could go back to – I don't know if that's a – if they did that out of the kindness of their heart or if they're going to change it. But
because that's a big deal when it's year to year. I mean, your family's like, oh, you're on a scholarship. And then all of a sudden it goes away or whatever it is. But I think what would happen is the player, it's kind of a fixed cost in terms of scholarships. Some of those are endowed. Some of them come from a certain fund the university has. It's actually the coaches and support staff who I think could probably pay the biggest price here initially, where I think they could just get furloughed. I don't know if they would lay people off. I think they might just furlough them if there's no season.
Wow. It affects everything.
Yeah.
2020 is just such a ridiculous year. And so if you, I don't think people know what an economic driver college football is. This is getting interesting. Pat Forty, who used to work with us at ESPN, who now works at Sports Illustrated, just tweeted this. Sources, ACC ADs met today and are moving forward in an attempt to play, in the words of one staffer. League presidents could be meeting today as well. So now you have a house divided.
Some of that was Trevor Lawrence last night. You saw that.
Right. So let's get Bruce Feldman in here. Bruce knows more about college football than anybody I know, has written several books, now writes for The Athletic, covers college football for Fox. Bruce, thank you for doing this. Let's start with that. Pat Forty just tweeted that ACC ADs met today and they want to move forward to play. Most outlets are reporting that the Big Ten is going to move football out of the fall, not play. Do you think that most teams are going to play, not going to play, or what's the status of kind of who's in and who's out?
I think, guys, right now you have such a split between, I think there's a lot of people in the Big Ten who are very disturbed by what their medical experts are telling them. I think there's a bunch of people in the Pac-12 who've heard the same. And, you know, we just reported that the Mountain West just basically said they're canceling their season. My guess is by the end of this week, you may have half of the FBS programs still engaged and thinking they're going to play. Now, what the SEC and the Big 12 and the ACC are going to do a week from now, I don't think anybody knows, because there's so many factors that are going to go into this. And I think if anybody tells you they think they know conclusively because they think, you know, an AD or a conference commissioner has even tipped their hands, I think they're kidding you. I really don't think anybody knows how this is going to play out a week or so from now with the rest of college football.
Bruce, what are the legal liabilities here? Like, what is if the Big 12 decides to play and the Big 10 shuts it down, and let's say somebody from the Big 12 gets coronavirus and they can prove they got it playing football, do they have other legal cases here, or we need to do waivers? Like, what are those issues here?
I believe that is a real concern. Now, obviously, I'm not a lawyer, and I think you can get varying opinions on this. But one of the things I've heard from people at the conference level, reading between the lines, there's a lot of fear about liability and class actions potentially hanging over college football for decades. So, what does that mean going forward? You hope that there isn't some of these horrific stories going to be attached to that down the road. ESPN.com had a story within the last couple of hours about there being at least 5 cases of myocarditis that connected in the Big Ten among athletes. The question is, and I think this is something that I've talked to a bunch of people around college football about a lot in the last week or so, is you'll see places tweet out, well, we've tested 75 athletes and we got 3 positives or whatever, and you'll see some, but it's a fraction really of the information related to the whole entity of college football. But the details are very limited, even what you get. And so what I have said is, what will we learn about, the conference commissioners are the ones who really know the severity of some of these positive cases, because we just don't have access to that information. And they're the ones who have got to be sharing that information with their college presidents and their ADs to give themselves a really informed decision. And right now, I think we're just kind of waiting to hear more from them to see, not necessarily they're going to divulge names. Nobody expects that with HIPAA, but just what exactly are they dealing with? And I don't think anybody, really has, up till that ESPN.com story, I don't feel like anybody had a great handle on it beyond the mom of an Indiana player going on Facebook or a University of Houston player going on Facebook and talking about their struggles. Because I think one of the things, I've noticed a lot is you tweet out, okay, there was 78 tests and only 3 people were positives. And then you'll see a lot of people tweet after that going, well, they're 18 to 22. They're going to be fine. It's going to be nothing or whatever. And, who knows at this point? The odds are that they probably are going to be fine, but we're not scientists. And I think the question is, we don't know any of those things, and so they got to really lean on their medical experts for what the intel they're getting.
Bruce Feldman is with us. Bruce, before you came on, Ramona and I were talking about the fact that football and basketball at most of these schools pay for all the other sports. So if you shut down football, even for all the right reasons, that puts the other sports in a tremendous predicament. Stanford already kneecapped 11 I guess what you would call minor sports. How big of a concern is that? If they don't play football, do we see what happened at Stanford start to happen all over the place?
Yeah, I think you would. Talking to some SEC ADs, they described it as it would be a monumental impact. And we're talking about for one season. I mean, one of the things that's come up a little bit is that you could be looking at a last case resort, maybe as they may try to shift to the spring. The idea being that they could find a way to get at least some semblance of a college football season with the TV revenue that they lean on for so much at some point in the 2021 academic calendar. So, are there challenges with that? No doubt. Who knows how much different actually things would be in the spring? That's the other thing is, is there going to be a vaccine readily available? There's just right now, I think there's just so much uncertainty. And we're not looking at it in the same dynamic as the NBA has a bubble, the NHL has a bubble. We're talking about college athletes. We're talking about a lot of them as it relates to college football. And I think one of the things that has really been concerning to a lot of people who were optimistic, and I'm talking about a lot of people I've talked to in the SEC, is what happens when the regular students come back? Will there be a surge that extends out to the college football team where they feel pretty confident that when they're in their own little dynamic, or if they want to call it a bubble, where, hey, they're going to suggest that they don't go on campus, that maybe they take all online classes. But we're talking about, for 4 months, are you going to have any interaction with some regular students? I mean, that is something that I think really concerns a lot of people in college athletics.
So, Bruce, one of the things that I think is readily apparent is that there's not a whole lot of centralized leadership. There's no college football czar. There's no somebody who's leading the way on this. So it's just being left to each conference or coach or university president. Is there a chance anybody like that could emerge by the spring? Kicking the can down the road to the spring. The only reason really to do that is the hope of a vaccine, I suppose, or the hope that we flatten the curve in our country, which, generally speaking, doesn't seem to be the case. If the vaccine is available, maybe. But is there anybody who can kind of pull this together on a more national level?
I don't think I wouldn't expect it. And here's why. The SEC, which is basically the king of college football, now the Big Ten may make more money, but the SEC is winning all the championships. Mm-hmm. they play less conference games annually than everybody else. They kind of, I don't say they operate entirely by their own set of rules, but the SEC is not going to, in my opinion, say, hey, we're going to welcome a commissioner who's going to dictate to us things in our best interest. I don't think they see a greater interest. And you know what? The Big Ten probably is in the same boat with that. Why would they want to share things more equitably with the Pac-12? I mean, they look at the Pac-12 and say, you know what? You guys haven't run your business very wisely as it relates to a college football brand. Why are we helping? Why are we going to take a sacrifice for that? I just don't see it. So while, you know, you could make the case, I work with Tim Brando for a few years on a broadcast group. Mm-hmm. And we talk about Azar all the time. And I'm thinking, you know, look, Oliver Luck would probably be great at it. He knows all sides of college athletics, and he's really, really smart. And he can get some consensus. I just don't think the people who need to acquiesce, they're just not that. That's just not them. Unless you see a huge, huge change in perspective, which I don't think we're going to see from them.
The consensus, Bruce, when you read around, is that we saw the Mountain West canceled today. The MAC is already canceled. It's being reported the Big Ten's going to cancel today or tomorrow, and that the Pac-12 will follow. Do you buy that? Do you think there's uniformity in the Big Ten and the Pac-12? Are they the next two to announce, in your opinion?
If there were two that were going to be next, I would think those would be the two. There's definitely a lot of discussions within the Big Ten that I've heard. And it really kind of seemed to, at least from my understanding, kick into high gear like Friday night, Saturday, when some of the ADs, the coaches I talked to, some of their ADs came away very, very pessimistic from some of their discussions with medical experts. And I think the reporting from Mark Schlabaugh and Paul Levine probably underscored a lot of what that was. And beyond that, I've always heard that if the Pac-12 would not want to be first, they would probably piggyback off of the wave that the Big Ten might make if they pull the plug. And so, you know, you look at when the Pac-12 decided, hey, we're going to go conference-only games. It was like right on the heels when the Big Ten made that move.
Right.
So I would not be surprised if that was the 1-2 combination at some point in the next 36 hours. But I would also caution, it's a very fluid situation. I mean, you saw a lot of influential Big Ten coaches take to Twitter and
create say they want to play.
Stir it up. Yeah. And I think that, you know, somebody would argue, say, okay, does it make sense to completely pull the plug on this thing, or are we going to delay it? Now, maybe that means they delay the start of their season because they put this schedule together just a few days ago and announced it to have the flexibility to bump stuff back later in the calendar. Maybe this is that flexibility and, all right, we're going to have to push that panic button and we'll bump it back and do that, as opposed to just completely, you know, saying we're canceling the fall season.
Bruce, we know you're swamped, and I really appreciate you doing this. We know that this is a college football tidal wave of a story, and you're going to be busy. So thank you for making time for us, man.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, there's Bruce Feldman and Ramona. Coming up next, we're going to do a little radio Tinder. We'll lighten the mood around here.
Okay.
We'll get Lindsay in here, and then at the top of the hour, Game of Games, written by Ramona. Could be interesting. 710 ESPN.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, time for Radio Tinder. Lindsay has put together a list of things for Ramona and I. Lindsay, what do you got?
I'm going to preface this with, please excuse my puppy in the background crying or making weird noises.
Okay, we are pro puppy around here. Go ahead.
All right. Starting off in the bubble, Utah Jazz guard Donovan Mitchell appears to have been getting busy this weekend. On Sunday afternoon, Mitchell seemingly accidentally went live on Instagram with some sexually explicit noises playing in the background. Many on social media chimed in to speculate that Mitchell managed to sneak a woman in his hotel room inside the bubble. Do you guys think Mitchell actually managed to, as Mason would put it, violate the sanctity of the bubble? Swipe left or swipe right?
I am going to swipe left on this, Ramona. I think what happened, and I need to put this as gently as possible, but you've been traveling with the NBA almost as long as I have.
Yes.
There is a, how can I put this? A preference for adult-rated films in some of these NBA hotels, and I think that is what was going on in the background. I don't necessarily think Donovan snuck a girl into the bubble. I think he was watching something either on his computer or on TV. What do you think?
I think that I don't really want to know. I think that is Donovan's personal business. And generally speaking, okay, this is my standard. We don't report on guys' personal business unless it affects their ability to perform on the court, right? So with Lou Williams going to the Gentlemen's Club.
Lemon Pepper Lou?
Yeah, Lemon Pepper Lou. Okay. Like, that affects his ability to perform on the court because he was not on the court for two of those games since they gave him a longer quarantine for going to a high-risk establishment, okay? That is fair game. Now, Donovan Mitchell in his hotel room with an IG Live with some sounds that are of
Now, wait a minute. Challenging
origin.
Your premise, though.
Okay.
If
All
he,
I need to know is,
Ramona,
is he endangering himself or anyone else in
correct.
The bubble? Right.
He could be.
If he was violating, as Lindsay put it, violating the sanctity of the bubble, if he actually did have a girl in there, then I think that would be something reportable because it affects the other players. But, Lindsay, I think it's a strong possibility that was outside media, if you know what I mean.
Boy, that's just some bad luck right there. That's all I got
to
say.
It doesn't even have to be outside media. It could also just be a conversation, with a friend.
And by the way, this is why I'm not on IG Live. You and Mason with your TikToks and your IG Live and your Periscopes.
Yeah.
It's just another way to get in trouble.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate time to go live on accident.
There are times when I'm walking outside and my phone's in my pocket and the Twitter's open and all of a sudden it's like, oh, did I just tweet something? It was like, it's usually gobbledygook, but we got to be careful with those programs. Very dangerous.
All right, Lindsay, what's next?
All right, sad news in the world of pro wrestling. This one hit especially hard for me because he's one of my favorites. James Kamala Harris passed away at the age of 70. He was known as the Ugandan Giant, who wrestled in war paint and a loincloth. Had a solid run through the late 80s and early 90s as a main event heel.
Wait a minute, do you have that name right?
The Ugandan Giant, yes. Kamala Harris, yes, he does have the same.
Yeah, his
that's real name
I was
is
curious about.
Yeah, his real name is James Harris, but he went by Kamala.
Okay.
Kamala the Ugandan Giant.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he was a main event heel with stars like Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. Like I said, in the late 80s, early 90s, one of my favorites. Do you guys have a favorite wrestler from that era? Swipe left or swipe right?
I'll swipe right, Lindsay. I did not watch a lot of wrestling back then, but I was my first TV job, which I started in the mid-80s, was in Monroe, Louisiana, which was very, very big in wrestling country. So that's when Macho Man Savage and Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, and the Honky Tonk Man and Miss Elizabeth and all those people were popular. But my favorite one was there was a wrestler in the 80s named the One Man Gang. All right.
He was great.
The guy was giant. I mean, just a colossal man. And then apparently they had issues with clearing the name One Man Gang, so they had to stop. And literally overnight, the same wrestler, the same guy, came back into the ring as Akeem.
Visitor
from the East.
Yep.
And so I figured anybody who would try, it's literally like putting on a fake mustache and trying to change your identity. So I'll go with the One Man Gang. Momo, did you watch wrestling when you were younger?
I have one word for you. Woo!
Ric Flair, Michael Thompson's favorite wrestler.
I met him once. Okay. Nevin and I went to WrestleMania when Ronda Rousey was making her big debut. And it was kind of a story because it was a crossover, right? She was like moving from UFC to wrestling, and I was going to write the big story there. So we're walking around, like before the big fights, and I see Ric Flair and Nevin, like he can't even breathe. Like he's like, no, it's Ric Flair, it's Ric Flair. And I was like, I know, yeah, that's Ric Flair. And he's like, woo, woo. And then we start looking at Ric Flair. He looks at us and he goes, oh, I love you. And I go, are you talking to me? Apparently, he totally watches ESPN.
He's a huge NBA fan. He's a big Cavs fan.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a NBA fan. And so I said, you know what the best thing you can do? If you took a picture with my husband and you guys just both just wooed it up, it would just make his life. So that was like Nevin's Facebook profile photo for a while.
Well, you guys remember we used to do a thing called the third chair where we'd bring somebody in the second quarter to hang out with Michael and I in those lean years for the Lakers?
Oh, yeah.
So Doug Mann, our statistician, one time arranged, without Michael knowing about it, bring Ric Flair into the third chair for, like, Michael's birthday. And Michael was like a little kid because, you know, Michael started at the University of Minnesota. Ric Flair is a Minnesota guy. And, yeah, he's a – but I've never seen Michael, who does not get starstruck. You know, he's pretty famous himself.
Yeah.
I've only seen him speechless a couple of times. One, when Ric Flair came up, and all Michael could do was say, woo! And and then the other time, he's a big tennis fan, and Roger Federer was at a game, and Michael got to go down on the court and meet him, and he didn't know what to say to Federer, because he's just so in awe of his talent. You know, Michael, he could talk for days. But Ric Flair is a big deal. That's a really good answer. All right, Lindsay, is that it, or you got one more?
What do you think the Venn diagram?
I got one more.
Who are like wrestling fans and tennis fans? What do you think that Venn diagram?
Very
is?
Small, but Michael's in it, and track fans. the other person, if Michael ever met, and I don't know if he has because he's been to a couple Olympics with Clay, but Michael is in awe of Usain Bolt, the Olympic sprinter.
Oh yeah,
he's a big fan of his too. But I'm sorry, Lindsay, I cut you off. Go ahead.
What do you got?
That's all right. Last one, several Steelers fans crossed the line with their trolling of Browns' Myles Garrett over his incident with quarterback Mason Rudolph last year. Over the weekend, Myles Garrett exposed some of those fans who were sending him racist DMs on Instagram that are extremely vulgar and inappropriate in nature. After internet sleuths found at least one of the trolls' employers, the company announced that the racist employee had been fired over the DMs. Do you guys agree with Myles Garrett exposing these racist idiots' identities? Swipe left or swipe right?
Swipe right 1,000 times right. Ramona, I remember that one day. It was just such an eye-opener for me that, remember I used to goof with you as a joke? You would forget to log out of Twitter. And so Mason and I would, when Ramona would do that, we would take over her Twitter identity.
Oh, I love that.
And you know, we'd write things like, the worst decision I ever made was even considering going to Stanford. I'll never, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Just harmless stuff. But then when you came in to fix it, you said to me, look at some of my mentions. And they were so offensive, people writing stuff to you, that I literally wanted to go out and kill them. I just think that it's a completely different world for, and you're a modest celebrity, Ramona. You're not as famous as Myles Garrett. But you have no recourse against these people. All you can do is delete them. It just seems to me that the more people like that we can expose, the better.
Yeah, so I'm going to say swipe right also. Look, I have often thought that a really good reality TV show would be Troll Hunters, okay? Let's get camera crews to go out and chase down internet trolls, people who send these awful messages. And like,
that
let's
is a good
just,
idea.
Yeah, and just candid camera them, right? Candid camera them as they are walking out of their place of residence, as they're sitting at their dinner table with their kids. I mean, the thing that always gets me, there are some like dads out there. Like, sometimes I'll look at the profile and they'll have like two young daughters and they're like, oh, daddy's little girl, and I'm such a girl dad. And then they write the worst things to female
so
sports reporters.
Unconscionable and offensive. Oh. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you guys need to go.
Yep, I'm glad Myles Garrett did that. All right, coming up next, Game of Games, written by Momo. We'll see how she does coming up next, 710 ESPN. All right, now it's time for Game of Games. Ramona has prepared the game for today. Lindsay, Funch, and I will compete. Lindsay, what is the... You have the lead, right?
Yeah.
in August, Lindsay? You're up 2-1 over me, I think.
I believe so. Yeah, I believe.
Do you have any
two.
In August?
No, it was gone last week.
Okay, so here it is, Ramona. A chance for Funch to get on the board, a chance for me to catch Lindsay, or for her to extend her lead. What do you got, Momo?
Okay, we're going to play a very fun game called Which One is Bigger? All right?
Okay.
I'm gonna leave. I have about 7 questions. We'll see if we get to all 7. We could stop after 5, depending on how this is going. All right? Do you guys want me to keep score?
I'll do it. Go ahead.
Okay, you'll keep score? All right.
Yeah.
Who has the larger wingspan, Giannis Antetokounmpo or Rudy Gobert? John, you go first.
Okay, I will go Rudy.
Okay, Lindsay?
I think I'll also go Rudy.
Funches?
Giannis.
John and Lindsay are correct. Rudy Gobert has a 7'9" wingspan. Giannis is only 7'3".
Only.
All right?
Yeah.
Only. Okay? Right.
Yep.
All right. Here's a question about the fathers of famous baseball players who also played. Who has the most home runs? Ken Griffey Sr. or Bobby Bonds Sr.?
Oh, that's a good one. Lindsay, you go first.
Little twist for you.
I'm going to go with Ken Griffey Sr.
All right. Funch?
I'll go the other way. Bobby Bonds.
John?
I'm going to go Bobby Bonds.
John Funch, you are correct, and it's not even close. Bobby Bonds Sr. has 332 home runs. Ken Griffey Sr. has 152. All right.
John 2, Lindsay 1, Funch 1.
All right.
Here we go.
Most times hosting the Oscars, Whoopi Goldberg or Steve Martin?
Oh, wow.
This is Funch first. Funch.
Steve Martin. Steve Martin.
Okay. John.
I will also say Steve Martin.
Lindsay?
I think it's Steve Martin, too. I didn't even know Whoopi Goldberg ever hosted the Oscars.
You're all wrong. Whoopi Goldberg has hosted the Oscars 4 times. Steve Martin has only hosted it 3 times.
Wow.
Nobody gets a point. Do you want me to? I have a bonus on here. I have a bonus.
Up to you.
Okay. I'm going to ask the bonus since none of you guys got that right. Can you name the person who has hosted the Oscars the most?
I think, wait, so this is ring in with your own
you have name? You have to have your own name.
All right, John. Okay? John, I'll guess.
Okay, go ahead.
I think it's Billy Crystal.
Okay, that is incorrect. Lindsay or Funches, do you have the answer?
Lindsay.
Go ahead.
I'm going to go with Johnny Carson.
Good guess.
That is incorrect.
Funch, you want to take a shot?
Did we host that a lot?
Funch?
Oh, I just realized who it is.
Bob Hope. Bob Hope.
That is correct.
Michael Thompson with
him.
Who's Michael Thompson?
Michael jumped in unannounced.
Michael Thompson jumped in.
That's right. That's right. I used to watch all the shows.
So thanks, Michael.
Huh? Michael can play then. Okay, right. Michael's part of our game.
Sure, why not?
Michael's on the board. Michael's
on the board. I like it.
Okay. All right. We're going to do it. That's good. All right. Okay. Which is taller, the Statue of Liberty or Madison Square Garden?
Michael, you go first.
Michael's first.
Liberty.
All right. Who's next?
Me. Yeah. I'll go the other way. I'll go MSG.
Okay. Lindsay?
I think it's MSG because I think it's a trick of a trick.
All right.
Funch?
Statue of Liberty.
It is the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I've been there.
Statue of Liberty is 151 feet tall. Madison Square Garden is 150 feet tall.
By the way, you guys know that I got it to go up in the torch. You know, that's now closed off. You can't go up there anymore.
You weren't even an American citizen at the time.
Yeah, but I snuck over. I snuck over my raft and went up there on a bus. By the time I got there, the torch was still open. You could go up to the torch, but now it's been closed off for like 30-some years.
They let a foreigner up there, and I've never even been. All right, so the score now. Michael 2, John 2, Funch 2, Lindsay 1. How many you got left, Ramona?
I have a few more questions left.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, I got 3 more left. All right.
Go.
All right. Who has more career rushing yards, Marcus Allen or Jerome Bettis?
Lindsay.
I'm going to go Jerome Bettis.
Funch.
Marcus Allen.
I am going to go with Lindsay, Jerome Bettis. Mike?
All right.
The bus.
All right, who is it, Ramona?
Jerome Bettis has 13,662. Uh-huh. Marcus Allen, 12,243.
Okay. Funch, John, and Michael have 3. Lindsay, you got to get these last two to
okay.
Stay in it.
All right, we're going to go We're going to go with this one next, okay? Which is taller, the Empire State Building or the Eiffel Tower?
Funch.
Ooh, Eiffel Tower.
I'll go the other way. I'll go Empire State Building. Michael.
Empire State Building, 1,402 feet, I believe.
Lindsay.
I'm going to go Empire State Building. Thanks, Michael.
Michael, you don't understand the point of this game. Don't give Lindsay information.
Well, that's okay because Michael got it right.
It's right. 1,400 feet versus the Eiffel Tower is only 1,600
right.
feet.
I've been up to the top of both of them.
Right, I kind of rigged this for Michael to win now because I chose this to be the last question. Okay?
Okay, so right now, let me give the score.
All right.
Michael 4, John 4, Funch 3, Lindsay 1, or no, Lindsay
All
got
right.
2. Lindsay,
Lindsay's
so Lindsay, 2. Lindsay can't win it, but she can still play. Go ahead, Momo.
Okay. Which player has scored the most World Cup goals? There's going to be three choices. Okay. Pele, Ronaldo, or Miroslav Klose?
Michael, wait a minute. You said last time, John, that I needed to get the next two right, and I didn't get the next two right.
No, you got the next one right. This is the second one, but Michael and I also got
this is the third one I got right.
Trust me. We have two, we have four. There's one question left.
Okay.
All right, Michael, you have to go first.
Do you want me to read the choices again?
No. I know it's not Ronaldo because he don't do nothing.
Don't give away too much information, Michael.
Just guess.
I'll go with Klosar. Klosar. Even though we think it's Pele, I say Klosar.
I think it is. That Klose is the Germany guy. Yeah, I think it's Klose. Funch.
I'll say Pele.
Pele. Lindsay.
No, I'm going to be different and say Pele.
All right. Momo, who is it?
Different than you guys, that is.
The answer is Klose.
Yep.
Ronaldo has 15 goals. Pele has 12. And Klose, the German star, has 16.
All right.
Well, that means John and Michael tied.
Yes, but I because I'm the only one who normally competes, I get credit for the win, right, Lindsay? Because I got 5. Unless you did a tiebreaker, Momo.
Yeah.
Well, the tiebreaker was the bonus question.
All right, that means I get it. All right, but that's okay because we're out of time anyway.
I think Michael should win because
I won.
He answered fewer questions.
That's right.
Oh, you know what? That's true. Michael, I'll give it to you.
That's right.
I'll give it to you. We'll give you a win even though you don't normally compete.
Exactly.
All right, so Michael's on the board. And Momo, did you know you get to take over the show now?
I do?
Yeah, I'm leaving to drive to go see Michael. You are going to host Crosstalk Michael and Alan Saliwa.
Fine.
Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, let's talk about Damian Lillard and Paul George and their girls and their sisters and wives.
Yeah, that got ugly quick.
Hey, how was my game? I want to know.
I thought your game was excellent, except you forgot the cardinal rule. You didn't do a tiebreaker.
Yeah, I did one. I just gave it away too early.
Right.
That's
but
the
other
thing,
than
that
Lindsay,
question.
I thought her game was good, didn't you?
It's okay, yeah.
I think it was great.
Better than Mason's.
Great. Probably
better
my favorite
Mason.
So far.
Yeah, Momo, you passed.
You're better than Mason.
Momo, you have to write another one for Wednesday, okay?
Okay,
I'll do the game tomorrow.
I'll try to make it not suck.
All right, Michael, I'll see you in about half an hour. Momo with Sliwa and Michael next. Pre-game show starts at 4:30. Lakers Nuggets at 6 on 710 ESPN.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Oh my gosh, I've been waiting all day for this, guys. Ramona Shelburne here with you. John Ireland is doing whatever he's got to do. He's driving somewhere. But Michael Thompson, Alan Sliwa are here for a little crosstalk, leading you into Lakers Nuggets from the bubble. Guys, you watch every second of every Laker game. What's going on out there? People are panicking. They're freaking out. We don't have a consistent lineup out there. What's going on?
Michael, go ahead.
They'll be all right. They're just going through the motions. After they clinched the number one seed, doesn't even matter anymore as far as home court. So they just got the number one seed. So believe me, Damian Lillard and the Portland Trailblazers will get their attention starting either next Monday or Tuesday, and the Lakers will be fine. They are basically just playing out the string here, trying to stay healthy, get through these things without any kind of major injuries or any kind of major hurts, and they'll be ready to go hit the ground running against Portland.
One of the things Ramona, Michael has talked about for the last 2 weeks was, okay, don't completely fold up shop, because we've watched NFL teams do that. He had a good example of the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson doing that this last season. That's the only thing I could say. I mean, if there's if there's one thing they need to be cautious for, don't just completely not pay attention. And actually, Michael, would you agree the game against the Pacers, Lakers were trying to win that game. And winning, I know, wasn't important, but LeBron and AD both played 35 minutes. It's actually one of the better games they've had in this bubble. And I got to imagine they treat these last two games maybe to some kind of effort. And if second half they decide, okay, let's just pack it in, then they're obviously doing that for the postseason.
What Frank Vogel should do is to make sure these guys maintain their conditioning and their focus and their timing and rhythm and everything, is tell all the starters, the main guys, listen, we're not going to completely shut it down where you guys aren't going to play for 2 weeks, but I'm going to play you guys 20 minutes. Go as hard as you can for 20 minutes, and then you can – that way, that's how you rest them. But to just go out there and go through the motions for 35, 36 minutes, that makes no sense. He should just tell them you're going to play hard for 20, 22 minutes, and then either today, and maybe if you want to take Thursday's game off, maybe you could do that.
You know, Michael, I'm with you on that, because whenever I used to play and we were just messing around, like, that's when I would get hurt. Mm-hmm. That's when, like, you're kind of playing, but you're kind of not. And you're just like, you know, in practice, we'd kind of simulate game activity, but it wasn't game activity. Right. And then you'd do a funky slide. And like, that's when you would scrape your knee up or hurt your elbow or whatever it is, because you're not playing at the certain level, but you're just going through the motions.
Yeah, you're kind of cheating the game. And when the game will come back and bite you if you do that.
Ramona, what do you think? I mean, there's six games in, only two games left. Obviously, we know the competition in the West. They could very well face Portland in the first round. Anything to be concerned about, or do you think this is they'll turn the switch on and they'll be fine?
Yeah, no, I think they're just experimenting. I think Frank Vogel is just trying to figure out which of these rotation players does he trust, can he use, what situations, what strengths they have. I mean, we really haven't seen much of Talen Horton-Tucker all year long, and all of a sudden he's playing 19 minutes a game the last couple of games. We haven't seen much of Quinn Cook. Like Frank Vogel and his staff, they just need to know, what can this guy do? Is he a player I can throw out there if there's a specific matchup, like especially a guy like THT where he's got those long arms, might be a good defensive guy. They're trying to replace, obviously, Avery Bradley and trying to shore up some of their perimeter defense. Like, you need to know what these guys have. And so obviously, you know, they're throwing weird combinations out there. They seem to want to be experimenting with small ball. The only thing that is concerning to me is something LeBron James said the other night in post game when he was asked about, you know, the Lakers issues, and he says it's not on the court, and he said, you know, it's something off the court, and it's bigger than that. And I think Joe Vardon from The Athletic wrote something down on a piece of paper and showed it to LeBron later and said, is this it? And LeBron laughed and said, no, you guys are always trying to dig. But the LeBron James that I know does not say things like that lightly. He does not bring up, you know, problems off the court in a cryptic way in front of the media unless there's something actually going on. And so obviously that sent me down a little rabbit hole of sending text messages and calls to people. But I don't, you know.
What'd you find out?
No, but everybody has guesses. Everybody's just guessing.
What do you think it is?
You know, my sense is I think it's maybe just personality issues with either some of the new guys or kind of how certain people are behaving in the bubble. Maybe they don't think they're taking certain things seriously or whatever. Yeah. But that would be my guess. You know, I don't think LeBron tosses stuff like that out there. I mean, just he's disciplined, right? Unless he's just trying to start something and just throw us all off. But he's too smart and too savvy at this stage of the game. And, you know, he's too good. I mean, I'm waiting for the cryptic tweet or whatever it is. But I think he said it at a time where whatever was going on that they're not liking is going to self-correct.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. The Portland Trailblazers are getting serious about this stuff, and they're big and strong. They're flexible on their wings. They've got good defenders. They've got Damian Lillard. So I think the boys will be – LeBron will have these guys ready for Portland, because I don't see anybody else beating Portland for that eighth seed.
Ramona, we talked about this last game. Michael and I – we're, I guess, in a sense saying, bring on the Blazers. Just, it's going to be great basketball, very competitive. And also, we were trying to make the case that something's got to wake the Lakers up a little bit. And I understand these are just seeding games that technically don't mean anything for the Lakers. But you want to talk about, you know, looking at an opponent and saying, all right, we better get ready, boys. Portland playing as good as anybody. You think it's better for the Lakers to take on competition like that? Or you think they'd be better off with a Memphis or San Antonio, one of these other teams?
I think I don't think you ever want to be scared of anybody. You want to feel like you can beat anybody in this league. You shouldn't be afraid of anybody. The only thing that slightly concerns me about this setup is it's going to be every other day. Like, there's just going to be a lot of basketball in a short amount of time. And so, like, I've never been one of those who's like, let's duck people. Let's opt for the easier matchup. You know, I think you should always bring on all challengers, and you should, that sharpens you. But I do worry a little bit about the condensed amount of basketball that's going to be played in the playoffs. So, you know, if it ends up being San Antonio or Phoenix, I don't think you get upset. But yeah, if it's Portland, which I fully expect it to be Portland as well, that is not a typical number eight seed.
No.
That is a really good team that is going to play a style that I actually think the Lakers can match up fairly well with, because they're going to play the three bigs. So you have Nurkic, Zach Collins, and Whiteside. I don't have to play all three together, but they'll probably play two of those bigs at once. Well, the Lakers have Anthony Davis and Dwight Howard or JaVale McGee. Mm-hmm. So, like, Portland's plan is to go big when other teams go small, but that's also kind of what the Lakers do very well, too.
By the way, how good is this race? I mean, who would have thought the talk of the tournament is for number eight? And that's literally what's happened. Who do you, Ramona, think is – I know we keep mentioning Portland, but there's potentially a play – not potentially, there will be a play-in game. Does Memphis hang on? Does Phoenix sneak in? Does San Antonio? Who do you think the other team is?
Man, I'm looking at this with this race for this seed, and I'm a little afraid of the Suns because they have absolutely nothing to lose.
Sure, they won again today.
They're that team that has nothing to lose. They have no pressure, no expectations. Everybody was like surprised they got invited to the bubble. Remember them? And you know, they really only got invited because they had to have the opportunity for the 8-9 game in the East. Mm-hmm. And Washington was, I think, 5.5 back or 6 back. And so then that opened up the door for the Suns to also be included, because you had to have the same standard in both conferences. So the Suns were like just barely invited. And now they're tearing it up. And like teams like that scare me, mostly because like in hockey, where hockey is one of those sports where home court doesn't matter all that much, or home ice doesn't always matter. If you get a hot goalie, if you get a hot team, like that number eight seed can win. And I feel like Portland is, if they can get hot, or Phoenix is the eight seed and they get hot, like that's a scary matchup. But if I'm the Lakers and you give me a choice between the Suns and the Blazers, it's not even a choice.
Ramona, you think this 8-9 play-in is a thing to stay beyond this year?
Oh, yeah. And Michael, like, I mean, I think the possibilities for next year are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're... You know, everyone I talk to in the NBA, because I have a little FOMO. Do you have FOMO? Do you know what that is, Michael?
No.
It's fear of missing out, right?
It
means everybody else is off having a good time and you're home not having a good time. Like you're missing out on the party or the fun.
No, when I'm home, that's when I'm having a good time.
that's why you're a highly evolved individual.
Yeah.
I've actually learned to be a little bit more like that since I became a mom,
that's right?
Because you just like being home.
Exactly.
It's fun being home with your son. But everyone in the NBA who's not in the bubble has FOMO. So I sit there at night, like, and I'm texting with GMs who aren't there. I'm texting with assistant coaches who didn't quite make the cut, or trainers or whatever it is, owners. And the feeling that everybody had, like, as much as this year is interesting for people, it's almost too hard to think about because you're not there. So everybody's talking about next year and how they're going to play. Is there any way they can play and get fans into the buildings? I know the Warriors are trying to work on that. They're trying to find, you know, any kind of scientific way to make this safe. Other owners are trying to say, well, could we have half capacity? Do we lose money on that? There's this idea of bubbles all over the place, like regional bubbles, where you go to the bubble for a month and then you come back with your family and then you go to another bubble. Like, everything is on the table for next year. And I think this is working really, really well. And I think it might be the prototype for next year, too.
If things have to start, and it looks like things will start in, say, middle to late December, will they keep this schedule forever now and just play until July? Just before July 4th?
I mean, this is kind of what Adam Silver's wanted, right? Mm-hmm. He's, you know, the real date that matters for the NBA is Christmas. That's the first date that matters on the NBA calendar. When they start in October, November, they're competing with the NFL. And college football. And so, I know as a reporter, like, man, my job, there's a little bit of ramp up in terms of, you know, doing SportsCenter hits and everybody, you know, wanting us to write a lot of stories right in the beginning. And then there's this trough from, like, November till the middle of December where people just don't really care about what we're doing. Like, we do. We care. We're paying attention. We're making our calls, writing stories. But it's really all about Christmas. And then, even after Christmas, there's all of January is NFL playoffs and BCS and stuff. So it's not until after the Super Bowl that the attention is squarely and solely on the NBA. So I don't think it hurts the NBA at all to move the calendar to a different time frame. I don't think that matters at all. I think they'd be fine with it.
Well, I think everybody, you guys were referencing the play-in. If it's not something that they seriously consider going forward, I think there's an appetite for it. Can you imagine if we get this Saturday and Sunday, Devin Booker and Damian Lillard for two more games before the playoffs start? I mean, it's almost the, I don't want to say the surprise of the bubble, but I'm paying more attention, Ramona, to the end of the standings than I am in the heart of the standings simply because of the bubble because of that play-in.
This is working out better than I expected for a race that does not include Zion. Like, you know, a lot of people around the league sort of would have told you, look, the NBA had to do some extra, they wanted some extra games in here because of Zion. People want to see Zion in the playoffs. They want to see more of him. That's obviously not going to happen. The Pelicans are not going to be in that. They're not in the race here. But Devin Booker is. Damian Lillard is. So if you're going to have somebody who is not Zion have to carry the day here, those are two pretty good.
Is Alvin Gentry in trouble because New Orleans looks so flat?
You know, that was the talk going into this. You know, he was a coach that was seen on the hot seat. And, you know, David Griffin knows him really well from their time in Phoenix, but he didn't hire him in New Orleans. And, you know, there's some question of, like, who would David Griffin have picked to coach this team had he be the one making this hire. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they make a coaching change. I mean, things... The one thing people don't realize, though, is that Alvin Gentry is very well regarded by ownership there in New Orleans. He has a really good relationship with Gail Benson and Mickey Loomis and everyone there. And so, you know, it's not going to be something where, hey, Griff, it's your decision no matter what. And that's what he does. Like, this is going to be a carefully considered decision.
Why did Draymond Green get fined? Because he's just a player commenting on another player. He has no power. Or do they think now players have as much power as GMs?
Yeah, I think because it was so dang blatant. I mean, it was so dang blatant. And like, they haven't done that before, and they haven't, you know, they haven't fined players for those kinds of comments before. But like, this was so like, this was like out and out recruiting. All right, look. Michael, I asked for you when I'm hosting on Thursday and Friday this week. Apparently, Ireland can't do double duty. Did you know that? Like, you guys have a Laker game in the morning.
Right.
And he's just like done. He's like, I'm off. I'm going to vacation. And I was like, no, I need Michael Thompson on the show with me. So I asked you. So I'm going to talk to you again all this week when we have crosstalk. But hopefully I'll talk to you again on Thursday.
You mean like to do the show with you?
Yeah, for a couple segments. I don't know.
Something like for that. A couple segments, yeah, but yeah. I ain't coming to do the whole show. Are you crazy?
Oh, no, not the whole show.
Kirk Morrison is filling in for
Oh, yeah,
John,
that Lamar Jackson hater. Talk to him.
I know, but I need some Michael Thompson.
Yeah, call. You can
Michael
call me. Definitely.
MT is like one of my favorite guys, so that you were like first on my guest list. If
yeah,
I did
definitely.
Like
love
streak.
To talk to you. Especially
All
since
right,
me
and
you got
Sliwa,
so much in common. Woo!
Exactly. You and Sliwa go do Laker pregame. Lakers, right. Nuggets, coming up next, ESPN LA.